You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In India, 1 million children are living with a cleft lip or palate, one of the most common and curable of all birth defects. Megan Milan tells the story of two children born with cleft palates in one of the poorest regions of rural India in her documentary Smile Pinky. It won an Academy Award this year, and it's debuting on HBO tomorrow night at 7 p.m., and then it will also be shown at the Museum of Modern Art this weekend as part of the Indian film series there. I'm very pleased that it has brought Megan Milan to our show today. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
So what does a cleft palate look like?
Well, the palate is actually, you know, the roof of your mouth, the spot where peanut butter gets stuck. And where children who don't have a palate, there's just really nothing there between their nasal cavity and the roof of their mouth. So, and what we see more commonly is when children have the slit lip, you know, cleft lip. And but both of them can be, you know, devastating in their own ways.
Is this more common in India than it is in other parts of the world, or are children born with the same proportions just treated differently?
No, it is more common in both India and China have the largest numbers of this, not just sheer population size, but actually per capita there are more.
Because of genetic reasons?
Well, it's interesting. They don't know exactly what causes a cleft. There is most likely a genetic component, but then you can also tie it with the prenatal nutrition of the mother. So the poorer the mother, the more likely she is to have a child, you know, and the more malnourished the mother, more likely she is to have a child with this. But there is, even with that poverty level, there's still a higher concentration in India and China. But children in the States are born with clefts to a lesser degree, but it's covered by Medicaid. So every child born with a cleft here can receive free surgery and usually gets it within 3 months, which is the ideal time.
And I'm assuming that if it's treated that early, that there's less scarring than there is when it's allowed to go on for a while. These children are scarred both physically and emotionally, aren't they?
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. Less scarring in both cases. Yes, it's you know, the surgery leaves less of a mark physically. But I think, you know, the really dramatic thing is these young lives don't become defined by a birth defect that is so common and so easily cured.
Well, if it is common, does that mean it's less likely to stigmatize these kids in
India?
Well,
you
would think
so.
Because people would see it a lot?
Right. And there are 1 million children in India living with clefts, but there's over 1 billion people in India. So even though it's, you know, common on one degree, especially children living in isolated rural villages, they're often the only child there, or the only child, you know, they or their neighbors have ever seen. So, the very common, there's different superstitions all around the world just because there's not enough public health education to tell families and, you know, neighbors what has really happened. And most often it's considered a curse that the family has done something to anger the gods and this is punishment. And so these young children live their whole life identified as being a punishment from above. And it's just, you know, that's no life.
The last time you were here, it was to talk about the Lost Boys of Sudan, which was about two young Sudanese orphans trying to settle in the United States. It wasn't all that easy for them. Is that what interests you, stories about children in stressful situations?
I think what pulls me, I love journey stories in both of these films, you know, just as a storyteller have that to them. But I'm looking always for compelling people going through once-in-a-lifetime experiences. What exactly grabs my heart and my head, I'm not sure I have a formula for it. I am drawn to international stories. I love stories that can help a viewer connect with someone who might be living a life radically different from their own, but sort of find those places where you get to see how much more we all have in common than different. So even whether it's Peter and Santino, young Sudanese coming to America living in Houston, or Pinky living in rural Uttar Pradesh, India, you know, we all wake up in the morning. We all started out most likely with a mom and a dad. I mean, there's just so much. And so both of the stories sort of lent themselves to being very human, universal stories, but also drawing attention to social issues that grab my attention. And both lend themselves to taking, you know, just an entertaining movie, but then also helping channel that energy towards some social impact.
Well, the Sudanese boys came to Texas, and you're from Texas, so that's quite a leap when you wind up going to India. How did you wind up with this story?
I'm partly from Texas. Texas and Oregon, and I like the mix. So, I found out about the work in the film through the organization Smile Train, which supports Dr. Sabode's hospital, which is the hospital we spent time in, and was really drawn into their model. What they identified clefts as, you know, this very common, easily cured birth defect, and recognized that it was something that was only going to be solved by empowering local doctors to do it. And so they work in 76 developing countries around the world, giving the funding and training when necessary to local surgeons. And it just made so much sense. I mean, clefts actually weren't something on my radar besides occasionally seeing an ad in the Sunday papers or something. It just sort of hadn't taken hold. But once I sort of got pulled into what a huge impact it actually made on these young lives, that it was so far deeper than just the cosmetics. That pulled me in, and India, because it is one of the countries that has the largest concentration. And then actually what sold me on Uttar Pradesh, and Varanasi is the town where we focus, was my first conversation I had with Dr. Sabode, the surgeon. Our conversation had so little to do with medicine and surgery. His whole rhythm and mission to what he did just... He was such an appealing individual. I wanted to spend time with him.
So in this case, you have to actually get the kid before a decision is even made to try to correct this. You had to find the right kids, find the right stories. How did that work? You must have looked at more than the two children that you wound up filming.
Yeah. Well, it's always a big challenge. And for character-driven films like ours is, and it's an observational style, casting is everything. And it always takes, you know, a lot of gut and instinct, but also luck. For this one, though, I did feel like the scene where we see the social workers going out into the countryside and finding the children and meeting the parents for the first time and telling them that this, you know, stigma and this defect that they thought their child was going to live their whole life with can be quickly and simply cured. So the challenge of being there with the cameras rolling at that time was tricky. And the pre-production strategy I came up with, I worked with a really great Indian field producer named Nandini Rajwadi, and I sent her and one of the other social workers out into the field under the guise of being generic health researchers. So they met children with clefts and children with other health issues. And she sent me about a dozen children, little character sketches and photographs. And both Pinky and Gutru, the young boy that we follow in the film, really jumped off the page. And she recognized something that's one of my favorite parts of the film, that each of them had a uniquely strong bond with one of their parents, Pinky with her father and Gutru with her mother. So then when we went back, we sent out Pankaji, the social worker who's actually in the film. We let him just sort of let him loose in that area and said, go about doing what you normally do, and we're along for the ride. And then luckily he ended up at Pinky's house.
Well, many of the parents in the film said that they thought the reason their children were born with the cleft was because they had been born during an eclipse. I can't imagine that that's always the case. But you said in a recent interview with the International Documentary Association that the biggest challenge was finding common ground with the patients and families in the film.
Yeah, I feel like
they have to be convinced to even do this for their children?
Well, they did have to be convinced that the surgery was safe, and they have to be convinced that it's possible and that it's going to be free. And you know, the context that Pankaji, the social worker, helped me understand why it takes so much time is that, you know, these aren't families who've been given anything for free. So they're a little bit suspicious. And then, you know, one of the scenes I love with Gutru's mother is that, you know, she's like, you know, this is my son. I mean, yes, this is a hardship, but I love my son as he is. You have to prove to me this is safe. She was afraid. And who, rightfully so.
And what about when a foreign film crew parachutes into a village like that?
Right. I mean, and they're already going through such an intense period. I mean, I work, you know, first off trying to establish a trust and explaining to them why I wanted to tell their story. And the interview you're referring to, I mean, to explain a documentary that's going to be, you know, shown on HBO when they have no concept of this. Pinky's from a village with no electricity, no television. They've never been to a movie before. But the way I explained it was just that we want to tell your story so other children and other families don't have to go through that hardship. And then, you know, really giving them control and letting them know that if there was ever a time they didn't want us to film, they just had to give the signal and we'd stop. So my strategy is usually just being a human being first and a filmmaker second, and it tends to work.
Well, also works on film to look at these children. Now, the cleft lip and the cleft palate are disfiguring, but do they also cause trouble just getting through a normal life for these kids?
No, very much so. I mean, I think, you know, there is it often babies will die of malnourishment early on because they can't breastfeed because of the cleft. And then if they do survive and they have a palate, there's speech impediment and a lot of sinus issues. But I think that the even deeper trauma is the social stigma. I mean, hardly any of the children go to school. Neither Pinky or Guter in our film did, because they were just so ridiculed by their classmates. They couldn't stand it. And so to see something that can so easily be done have, you know, that that dramatic new beginning for a child was a really powerful experience to be part of.
My guest is Megan Mylan. Her film Smile Pinky will make its debut on HBO tomorrow night at 7 p.m. It will also be shown at the Museum of Modern Art this weekend. And I'm sure that winning an Oscar for this film did not hurt in getting people to look at it. But anyone who's seen it can't help but be moved. And there's no way of knowing that something like this is going to succeed, is there?
That the film or that the surgery?
You go to India.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
You think, okay, we're going to do a thing about cleft palates.
No.
And then you have to find the right kids. And I'm sure there were times when people thought, you know, you have to stop filming. This is just too much of an invasion of our privacy.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, I mean, in this situation, I think it was so intense for the families anyway. And I'm lucky enough to work with really wonderful crew who are so sensitive to that. Nick Duve, a local cameraman who is one of my cinematographers, is, you know, just such a quiet presence. And we work at, I do sound. So in some ways, I think we were part of the experience for them. But yes, I mean, it's always a gamble with a documentary. You have a hunch, you have a good story, especially with Verite. You're along for the ride, you know, this observational style. And you never know. And you cannot get into a documentary sitting out to win an Oscar. That's just, it can't be about that, or you'll never get through the day.
Well, they're in these remote villages. Where does the operation take place?
The operation is in a city in along the Ganges called Varanasi or Benares, the colonial names.
How do they get there?
Well, it's a huge undertaking. They have to go hours by foot, then an auto rickshaw, which is a uniquely Indian automobile, and walking again, and patients come from all over the countryside. I mean, there's a registration day where everyone comes together to be assigned a date over the next several months, and folks come by boat, by train, a lot of walking. So it's a huge investment of their time, and to some degree a gamble, because I think a lot of folks arrive still not 100% sure that it's going to happen, and every child that arrives that's healthy enough for surgery gets surgery.
But so some of the kids obviously are not going to be operated on. You were lucky that these two kids were.
Yeah.
Well, and were their operations success?
Yes, yes. I mean, there's almost 100% success rate with the operations. I mean, every once in a while there are complications and they have to go back and do a fixing. But one of the great things about SmileTrain's model, how they work with local doctors, is that there's time and funding to give surgery to every child who is healthy enough for it. And there's sometimes that children are just too malnourished and they need to get their strength up and then come back and get the surgery.
What about Guturu? Did he was he able to speak more correctly after the operation?
He is. My sister always gives me a hard time for not putting his name in the title. He doesn't get near the attention that Pinky does, who's sort of become
so
a small celebrity in India. But he does. Speech, you know, therapy is another, you know, would be another added benefit after that, because Guturu was already a 10-year-old boy by the time he had the surgery. So, but definitely, and he was, I mean, my heart, when we got back to shoot the epilogue, we returned 5 months later, and I went to his little village, and there was a group of boys out playing, and I didn't even recognize him. He looked like such a younger boy. The weight of the world had been lifted off of his shoulders. All of a sudden, he was a young boy again playing cricket. And he smiles, and he's back at school, and proudly so.
Now, I would assume that winning the Academy Award means that you'll find it a little less difficult to get funding, even in these tough times. Do you have another film in the works?
The funding piece, I think it's about as hard as raising funding for this station. It never gets easy. I mean, it's definitely a plus, but it never gets easy. I'm working on a film looking at race relations in Brazil that I've been shooting on for about a year, and hopefully we'll finish up next year.
Well, good luck with it, and thank you so much for coming by to talk about this film, Smile Pinky, and we could say, and Guturu. It's the Academy Award-winning film for documentary this year. It'll be shown on HBO tomorrow night at 7 p.m. And then as HBO does things, it'll probably be shown a billion times after that. But
throughout June and into July.
See it as soon as possible. Or you can see it in a theater at the Museum of Modern Art. It'll be part of the India film series that MoMA is presenting this year. And I want to thank you so much for being with us, Megan Mylan, to talk about it. Thank you. Welcome back.
Oh, always a delight. Thank you so much for having me.